This is Hazel Kahn on North Fork Works, where I introduce you to my neighbours who tell us how they live and work out here on the North Fork of the East End of Long Island. I've been wanting to meet Dave Burson for a long time, and so I'm especially happy to introduce him to you today. Welcome to North Fork Works, Dave.
Well, thank you very much, Hazel. It's my pleasure.
As far as I can tell, there are many moving parts to what you do and how you work. But it seems to me they're all interconnected and that they lead in and out of each other in some way. Much of what you do takes place in and around Greenport. But Greenport is where you came to. It's not actually where you're from. For some reason, I had the impression that you're Irish, but I was wrong about that. So tell us.
Well, Hazel, you're right about many moving parts. So many, as a matter of fact, that my life resembles Rube Goldberg's sculpture more than anything else at times. Yes, it is true I am not a Greenporter, dare I admit it. I was born and raised in public housing in the Bronx many, many years ago, when being raised and born in public housing was a good thing and not necessarily the bad thing that it's associated with today. When I became of age, I moved to Manhattan and lived in an area of New York called Hell's Kitchen on the West Side. I earned my living, ironically enough, on that island of Manhattan, running sailboats out of South Street Seaport, the schooner Pioneer, and a beautiful sailing vessel called the Petrel out of Battery Park. I have spent most of my life out at sea, literally and probably figuratively as well. I became a bit of an expert in celestial navigation.
Celestial navigation is not necessarily something people know what it is.
Celestial navigation is the means of pre-GPS of using five stars, five planets, should I say, and 57 navigational stars to find your way around the ocean. Anybody that's read David Sobel's book, Longitude, is familiar with what I'm speaking about. And for many years, I spent my life teaching people offshore, going to the Caribbean from New York or going to Europe, teaching people on big schooners how to do celestial navigation. And in the process, became a licensed captain myself and began to run these boats.
Celestial navigation, has it become defunct now that there is GPS?
It's not actually defunct. I would say it's like the study of Latin. It's a good thing to know at cocktail parties, but not many people pursue it. I write a regular column every month for Ocean Navigator magazine about celestial navigation. I think on an optimistic day, I would say that I might have 8 readers, but maybe I'm overestimating that. It's an intellectual pursuit that's very stimulating, and what it does is it opens up the natural world to those who are interested in having that opened up to them. And I was one of those people. I got to Greenport in the 1980s when I was hired to help sail a boat from Greenport to Bermuda to the Caribbean. And when I came to Greenport, I thought, this is where I'd like to live one day if I ever get a couple of dollars together. And about 10 years later, I did get a couple of dollars together and immediately came back to Greenport, rented a house for the summer, and by September had bought a house and began the process then of leaving my fifth-floor walk-up apartment in Manhattan to my beautiful, small little home in Greenport, where I have been ever since.
Do you live on the water?
No, ma'am, I do not live on the water. Having made my living on the water for many years, the last thing I want to do is live on or near the water.
Do you see water differently now than you did then? Because water seems to become such a frightening thing.
Not to me. My experience as a very spiritual, although not a religious person, is that if one wants to meet the presence of the omnipotent, the only place to really do that I have found is out at sea. I have no fear of the water at all. I have a very great respect and an understanding that the nature of life can be seen in the water, which is not to say that when I take boats out that I am not careful, that I am not prepared, that I am not cognizant of the danger that always surrounds us as human beings when we enter into that realm. But I have great affection and love for the water as a door, if you will, that could lead us into understanding a lot about nature and the world we live in.
Because to me, as somebody who doesn't really live on the water and never have, to me, the water is just a more terrifying thing than it was because of all the climate change. I just find water much more menacing now than I ever did. And you yourself, has nothing's changed for you, even though seas seem to be angrier than maybe they were?
No, the water to me is dangerous, but it's heroic. It's one of the natural elements, and I'm drawn to it.
And you understand it. Your relationship is one of understanding.
No, my relationship is one of acceptance more than anything.
You brought along the book that you've just published, and it's called Workers on the Waterfront.
When I moved to Greenport, I had been running big sailboats in New York City, and I wanted to run a boat in Greenport. There was one boat, the Mary E., that was owned by Teddy Charles, who was an old friend of mine, and Dan Halleck had a boat. And I thought, even though I have my license, my Coast Guard Merchant Marine license, as a sailing license, that we didn't need another sailboat here. So in 1999, Andrew Rosum, who's my partner, and I bought an electric boat called Glory. And we have been running it ever since. In 2008, we got off the grid and put solar panels up at Preston's, and since 2008, we have been the only Coast Guard certified tour boat in the United States that is solar powered. So we have an environmentally clean, beautiful little boat that doesn't damage the world. Top speed is maybe 6 knots. It's certified by the Coast Guard to carry up to 12 passengers. Over the course of time, I befriended many of the people who have been in the village much longer than I, dock builders, fishermen, canvas workers, and having trained as a writer and as a journalist, I thought it would be an interesting project to write about them and to take their pictures and to do a show about them. So I contacted a friend of mine who I used to do writing assignments with around the world, Juliana Thomas, who's a great photographer. And together in 2006, we took a series of photographs and I wrote essays about the people who were my friends, basically, who worked on the waterfront. People who still were making a living in the 21st century by doing something that seemed to me timeless.
Timeless or vanishing?
Definitely vanishing. So we did a photographic show that was very well received. And then the pictures were very large, 31.5 by 31.5. And it was very difficult to find a venue after our show was over at the Greenport Library, the Floyd Memorial Library. South Hole Town hung the pictures actually for about 6 months. And then they were hung at Castello di Borghese,
which is a winery.
Yes. And then we couldn't find a home for them any longer. And they were basically put in semi-storage. And in the ensuing years, a couple of the people that I knew who were in the original photo show, namely George Costello and Kerry Heaney, passed away. And I thought it would be appropriate, because I'm getting a little long in the tooth myself, that I make another effort at putting these people out there in the world. So I decided that it was time to do that. And in June of 2013, I began the process of figuring out how one takes a good idea with pictures and turns them into a book. By November of 2013, the process was completed.
And here it is, right here on my desk.
That's Kerry Heaney Kerry and his Heaney. Son Tim on the cover. Kerry passed away, unfortunately. His son Tim, actually, in that picture was 14. Mm. He has just become a father. Mm. And he and his brother Sean have basically taken over their father's business, and they have a dock building business.
That's a wonderful, it's a very strong photograph. So now the 21 pictures, are they all in here in the book?
Yes, they
all
are.
All of them. And each of them has a page of text.
Yes, opposite. A little essay that I wrote about the people who were photographed.
What do they have in common? What is it? Is there anything that makes workers on the waterfront different from other workers in Greenport or anywhere else?
That they're obstinate. Let me put it this way. They manifest the characteristics that I probably have in myself, because I, too, am a worker on the waterfront. I have spent my life on the water. There's a certain amount of perseverance and obstinance that is required to pursue crafts that are not high-tech or more in keeping with the 21st century. There's also a certain amount of reality that sets in that if you embark on a program of work or career, you have to take responsibility for the choice that you made. And what I admire about the people that I have written about and who I know, I admire many people, but this specific group of people, many of them are second, third, fourth generation doing the same thing. I admire their persistence. There are people that have choices, and they have chosen to do what they're doing. I'm not saying that it's better or worse than anything else that anybody else chooses to do. I'm just saying, because I too have chosen to make a certain life for myself, that I have a certain empathy, if you will, with everybody who also is working on the water. Also, the water is very symbolic in a lot of ways. I mean, where the water meets the land is, you know, it's at the edge. There's a lot of resonance in my mind about all that symbolism. I just admire people that are persistently ignoring the fact that they've chosen a really hard way to make a buck.
Right. But they do make a buck, otherwise they wouldn't be third and fourth generations.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, people have figured out what they have to do. Now, it's not every community that could say that, and certainly in Greenport, it's lesser and lesser, or fewer and fewer number of people that are able to do that. I mean, once, as I write in my introduction to this book, at one time, a book honoring the workers of the waterfront of Greenport would have been superfluous. No one would have cared because everybody worked on the waterfront. Mm. But that is not the case any longer. Greenport has shifted its gaze from the east, Peconic Bay, and Block Island Sound, the Atlantic Ocean, to more of Park Slope and Williamsburg and Manhattan. That's neither a good or a bad thing. It just is. So the patrimony, the legacy of what made this village great, which was boat building and oystering and fishing, is being forgotten. And that's fine. That's what history is about. I mean, not everything has to last forever. My obligation as somebody that came to this village of Greenport was to look around and see what I could do to acknowledge what I came to. I didn't come to the village to try to change it. I didn't come to the village of Greenport with ideas about how I could make it better. I came to the village of Greenport because the way it was where I wanted to live.
Dave Burson is talking about his life and work on North Fork Works on WPKN Radio. This is Hazel Kahn. I don't think you've talked enough about your boat, and you certainly haven't talked about the children. As I said in the beginning, it seemed to me that all your projects are sort of interconnected. So the photographs in this book came after your boat.
Yes, that is
correct. That boat is basically your source of income, your livelihood.
I don't know what my sources of income are, and it's quite interesting. In 2008, I began focusing more attention instead of just taking people and explaining the history of Greenport on the boat. With Bob Jester, who is a mentor of mine and a great science teacher, a great man, great educator.
Mm-hmm.
And we started running five-day science programs on Peconic Bay on Glory, which is the name of our solar-powered electric boat.
Mm-hmm.
That evolved to much more ambitious projects where a couple of years later, not only was I doing science programs, but I was doing art programs. I'd hired art teachers. We started doing writing programs. Then I got involved with Joe Critali, who's the children's librarian at Floyd Memorial Library. We began running free art, science, and writing programs in conjunction with Cutchogue, Matatuck, Southold, and Greenport Libraries. So in 2011, I decided, well, I'm running free programs. How am I funding myself? So in 2011, my partner, Meg Bennett, and I set out to figure out how we could qualify to be a 501c3. And we established Glory Going Green, Inc., which is a tax-deductible educational foundation whose mission statement is to educate the children of the community for free in science, art, and writing. During the summer, we run programs on Glory for free for the children of basically the North Fork, Matatuck, Southold, Cutchogue. During the winter, I focus my attention on the children of Greenport, and every Saturday morning, and this is our second year, from 9 to 11, the village of Greenport has allowed us to use the Little Red Schoolhouse next to Aldo's on Front Street. And we gather fifth and sixth graders. We usually have 12 to 14 children at a time on six-week programs that run from October through May. We get snacks for the kids through the Blue Duck Bakery, through the IGA, through Peconic Landing. It becomes a very community-oriented, wonderful experience. And that's what we do.
You talked about your source of income being, you know, the tourists or the people who go on your boat. But you're selling this book. You're selling the book Workers on the Waterfront.
Well, it became clear to me that unless I hired a full-time grant writer, which I'm not going to do because we don't do that, or unless I spent more time diving into the minutiae of grant writing, which I'm not going to do because I have enough on my plate, then I had to come up with a way of sustaining these programs. It is true, and very true, that the Greenport Rotary has been very forthcoming with me. We're much obliged. The East End Maritime Museum, very obliged. But to maintain a free program, well, here's the way I look at it. Mark Twain said that anybody could play a game of pool on a table that was level. The game only becomes interesting when the table is not level. For me as well, anybody could run a program where you're charging money. It's a much more interesting challenge to run a program where there, you don't charge money. And that is what I choose to do. So I have to come up with a solution of how to raise money without having constantly to go out and plead and beg. So I thought that since we have a 501c3, I would publish this book, Workers on the Waterfront, under the imprimatur of Glory Going Green, which is the 501c3. So all the proceeds from the sale of this book go to Glory Going Green, Inc., which is a tax-deductible 501c3. I have a Glory Going Green Facebook page. So what I'm trying to do, Hazel, is I'm trying to come up in these very harsh economic times with sustaining an idea that I have without going to people with my hat in my hands. And not only that, respecting people and offering them something in return. Instead of saying, can I have a good donation for a good cause? I'm saying, here's a great book that honors the people of this community. And by buying it, you contribute to the well-being of this community.
How's it going?
Well, it's very interesting. In the real world of grown-up people, I would say that the sale of these books is ridiculously low. But in the world that I inhabit in Greenport, I would say I'm delighted.
Mm.
The response has been terrific. Everybody knows where I'm coming from. They're very supportive.
But if people listening to this program would like a book, can they get it from you?
Well, yeah, they could get it from me. Again, I'm not that sophisticated, so everything is still done in a very kind of old manner, if you will. I mean, I have an email address. People could write me, and I could send them a copy of the book. I'm glad to do that. Or they could go to Preston's in Greenport, or Mills Canvas, or the Greenport Liquor Store, and those are the venues that are selling the books. I don't sell it online. I don't know how to. I can't take on any more projects. We do the best we can. That's all I can say.
But give people your email address.
My email address is D, as in David, Berson, B-E-R-S-O-N, number1@yahoo.com. Or you could reach me at Glory Going Green in Greenport on Facebook. Lord, 1806, we set sail for the cold quay at Cork. We were sailing away with a cargo of bricks for the Grand City Hall in New York. We'd an elegant craft, she was rigged fore and aft, and oh, how the trade winds drove her. She had 23 masts, and she stood several blasts. And they called her the Irish Rover. From the banks of the Lee, there was Hogan from County Tyrone. There was Big Jim McGurk, who was scared stiff of work, and a chap from Westmeath named Malone. There was Slugger O'Toole, who was drunk as a rule, and Fighting Bill Tracy from Dover. And your man Mick McCann from the banks of the Bann, the skipper of the Irish Rover.
So you've now talked about how everything is connected, your enterprises, let's say. I'm wondering, though, what is it about the North Fork that maybe you find particularly unique or different from other people? Or maybe you don't.
Well, the interesting thing, Hazel, anybody that's lived in New York for any longer than 1 minute understands the provincialism of New York City. I lived on West 36th Street between Dyer and 10th Avenues, about as far west as you could get before you fell into the Hudson River. One side of the street was Irish, the other side was Italian. That one block was our neighborhood. Every block or every five blocks in the city of New York is like that. Extremely provincial. Likewise, and that is a good thing and a bad thing. When I came to Greenport, I saw that same heterogeneous community that I had grown up with in New York in front of me. There was a diverse community of Hispanics and Afro-Americans and whites living together. I didn't see that so much in other parts of the North Fork. At the time, I was being directed to look at houses that were in other communities other than Greenport. But I understood when I saw Greenport immediately what Greenport was, which was the world that I had come from. It's the world that I grew up in and the world that I choose to live in. Very heterogeneous community. I will say I know very little about the rest of the North Fork because I am extremely provincial. I know my block, I know Front Street, I know Water Street, I know the folks at the IGA. I don't really know much. I don't travel much on the North Fork. I have an old pickup truck that basically gets me from Greenport to the town dump. And that's really about as far as I go.
And you've said to me, and you've also been quoted in Beth Young's East End Beacon, you don't want to look west, you want to look east. And you think, I don't know if there's a should in there, I mean, it's not a prescription, but talk about that. So the dump is about as far west as you go, maybe.
Well, yeah, it's only because Billy Hands down at the Orient Service Station is, you know, said to me, listen, Dave, you know, you could drop another $5,000 in that old pickup truck, but I wouldn't go past Riverhead if I were you. So
Billy Hands was also my guest on
this
Billy, program.
Yeah, you know, Billy's my pal. So when Billy says, don't take your truck further than Riverhead, I listen to Billy. I don't know what to say. I had my adventures as a young man. I traveled all around the world. I had great experiences. I am perfectly content, as Thoreau said, in Walden, to have a house with a partner, a couple of dogs, a couple of cats, a couple of chairs for our guests. I don't need to go anywhere. I need to focus my energy on Peconic Bay, which is a bay that I just love. The people of my community who I share things with. We all worry about economic hard times. Greenport is a tough place to make a buck for everybody. It's tough. It's tough for the people that live there. Everybody's got two or three jobs. But there's no free price to live in paradise, and we know that. It's beautiful, and we're willing to pay the price that we have to live out there. And my focus of energy at this point in my life is to put my energy into that community, for better or for worse.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Heard Dave Burson talk about the many things he does living and working in Greenport on the North Fork of the East End of Long Island. North Fork Works is heard on the first Wednesday of each month at 7:30 p.m. on WPKN 89.5 FM Bridgeport, streaming live on WPKN.org and archived on hazelcahn.com. North Fork Works is produced by Tony Ernst. The music you've just heard is performed by Dave Burson during the course of this interview.